Hello and welcome back to The Good Stuff, a podcast for the Irish non-profit community brought to you by The Wheel. I'm Emily Burke, and this is the second episode of our three-part series about language and the non-profit sector. In the first episode, we talked about why exactly words matter and the many different words that exist to talk about non-profit organisations. It's worth listening back to if you haven't already. Just go to wheel.ie/podcasts and look for Series 3, Episode 1. In this episode, we're all about keeping it simple and saying what you mean. Our guest is Sean Driver, who works with the National Adult Literacy Agency, or NALA, as their plain English editor.
I've worked with NALA for 2 years now, it's my third year, and I used to work as an English language teacher, and before that I did an English degree in Trinity. So yeah, I work with organisations helping them to improve their communications.
Before getting into plain English specifically, I asked Sean why he thinks it's important for organisations to carefully consider their choice of language.
If you work in a non-profit, you want to make change, you want to make changes happen. And the way to make changes happen is to, you know, educate people about your issue. And if you don't use language that people understand, you won't make any change happen. So when we work in non-profits or charities, I remember in the previous podcast you were talking about that, what terms should be used, non-profits or charities. You know, talk to people in language they understand, and then you'll affect meaningful change. Because if you talk to people and the information is going over their heads, well, then nothing's going to happen.
I also asked him to tell me a little bit more about his work.
It's kind of three parts of the job. There's editing, which is working with organisations to improve their communications. So some of our clients can include the Department of Employment Affairs and Social Protection. That's a fantastic name, or you just say welfare. We work with Citizens Information. So these people, you know, they have a real important role in kind of giving people information, you know, that is so important for their lives. And you don't want the language to get in the way of it, you know. You want people to understand it the first time they hear it. That's kind of our definition of plain language, is information you can understand the first time you hear it and act on it, you know. So organizations sometimes can trip over themselves with their message. And so it's kind of my job as an editor to kind of read their material and kind of strip it back to the most essential parts without dumbing it down, without changing the meaning, you know. So that's the editing part of the work. Of course, it's more effective if we can train people to write in plain English the first time rather than having it edited. So, you know, we work with all different sorts of organizations. We work in the health space, so like health literacy. We work with legal organizations. We work with financial organizations. So all these different areas, they all have their particular language. And, you know, you want to educate people to be able to use that language, but you also don't want to talk over their heads. So when you're writing, it's a really, you know, it's very important that you educate people and you don't talk down to them. So by training people to write in plain language, you train them to write in inclusive, you know, inclusive words, inclusive structure, that the key message is at the top of the document or the top of the web page. And yeah, that's kind of the training aspect of it. So some of our clients that we worked with, some of our clients we worked with include the Law Reform Commission, the Commission for Regulation Utilities. So you can see that the kind of breadth of people who want to work in plain language, like a Law Reform Commission, and then like people who work in utilities. So it's very, very important that plain language is adopted by all sorts of organizations all around Ireland and abroad. Yeah, and then the advocacy. So that editing and training is advocacy. But then we also do lots of work in terms of organizing plain language awards or plain English awards. Our last one was in 2019. We kind of took a break last year because of the pandemic. Yeah, we're going to organize one this year. So that'll involve different organizations sending in entries, and then we'll organize a panel of judges. So there could be more information on that coming up. Other advocacy work we've done, the kind of big advocacy work we've done, is a plain language bill that we had 2 years ago. It went to the second stage, but due to Brexit and other things going on, it kind of fell and never became law, and then the government changed. So we're kind of advocating for a plain language bill to be introduced. So that would involve all public information to be in, you know, plain language, plain English and plain Irish. Yeah, so that's something we're advocating for. In the current government, there's a commitment in the programme for government for a plain language reform. So in previous governments, we had a plain language bill. So we're advocating for, you know, legislation. So that's ongoing. Other advocacy work, we do a lot of advocacy work. One that I did last year was called Know Your Rights. It was organized by an organization called Fair Trials, who were a criminal justice watchdog in the EU. And it was a really great project because it had maybe 15 different member states involved. And it was myself as a plain language expert and an Irish criminal expert called Damien Coffey. He's a solicitor. And we went over to Brussels and we met similar people from similar countries. And we wanted to make sure that the information that people are given in Garda stations is in plain language. That's a flavour of the kind of advocacy work that we do.
I was curious if plain language has a strict definition, or if it's more a case of you'll know it when you see it.
The definition of plain language would be, our definition of plain language would be information that you can read one time and act on it, you know? So at the moment, the International Standards Organization are working on, standardizing what exactly is plain language, because at the moment, knowledge is used guidelines. So it's kind of an interesting time in plain language, but what actually is like a standard, but still kind of being developed. So when we talk about plain language, we talk about guidelines. So in the USA, last year was the 10-year anniversary of their plain language bill, or their plain language act, where it was passed into law. So it's kind of an international trend to just put the impetus or put the pressure on government organizations to make sure that, you know, that they can't hide behind legalese or officialese. They have to deliver information in language that people understand. So there's a lot going on with that internationally. So as you can imagine, sometimes just the Nordic countries are way ahead, you know, so Sweden and Norway, they have lots of projects going on to deliver plain language. And so it's an international trend in to have like a give it legislative teeth, if you will. The GDPR, the General Data Protection Regulation, does mention plain language several times. So we're all very conscious of data protection nowadays. Yeah, and plain language is definitely part of that. Because if you're giving people information and they can't understand it because it's too difficult, can you really be sure that you have their consent, that you're really sure you have their agreement to do something? So plain language kind of falls into that as well. We all benefit from using plain language because we may have knowledge in one area of life. You know, you may be a solicitor and you may have knowledge about this, but when it comes to your health, you know, you may not have knowledge about that. And when you talk about vulnerable people, well, you know, in the nonprofit sector, we're working with some of the, you know, we're helping some of the most vulnerable people in society, you know, and, you know, we're professionals. We do this kind of work all the time, but the people who we're working with, this could be the most stressful period of their life, you know. And if our language is not clear, it's not concise, it's not, you know, it's not easy to understand, well then the message will get lost. So that's the kind of empathy that you have to have.
So how exactly does plain language benefit nonprofits?
So who benefits? Well, we as professionals will benefit because it will make our interactions with our clients easier, because we'll develop that trust, which is so important. So when you use plain language, you develop trust with your clients. Your clients will get better services, you know, they'll be able to rely on you. They'll feel like they can trust you and they'll be able to rely on you. You'll share information easier with your colleagues. And then hopefully, because this can be, we might come on to this, but sometimes it can be the culture of the organization that prevents you from writing in plain language. So it has to kind of come from the top all the way to the, you know, the frontline staff. And frontline staff are the most important, you know, in terms of delivering the message. But if your boss is talking to you in gobbledygook, it's very easy for you to pass on that gobbledygook to clients, isn't it?
It all sounds completely reasonable. In fact, it seems ridiculous that we would use anything other than plain language. So why do people so often default to unclear, jargonistic gobbledygook in their professional lives?
There's a couple of reasons. Like, we want to appear professional in our work, you know? So we want to appear like we're knowledgeable. So sometimes we'll use language that is more complicated than necessary because it looks professional. But you have to really kind of almost be brave to say, like, actually, I understand my topic so well that I don't have to use that when I'm talking to colleagues. I can explain it as simply as possible. When you use plain language, you're not saying you have to kind of like throw away your writing style or throw away rhetorical flourishes. It's just the way I look at it is like having like a pair of spectacles that you look at the world through this kind of plain language lens, where I can say, how can I make this easier? How can I make this as easy as possible to understand without, you know, changing the meaning? So I think people slip into using kind of technical language or jargon because they don't trust themselves. or the working environment doesn't trust them or doesn't give them training or the ability to do it. There can be long-standing legacy issues, you know, so if you're working in a housing department or you're working for a charity or you're working with legislation, it can be easy to say, oh, I don't feel empowered to kind of give my own summary of this legislation because it might be seen as incorrect. Where, you know, if you work in a nonprofit, you have to develop trust. So people come to you because they need help. And, you know, so you want to give them that help in language they understand. So just feel empowered to do that. And that's kind of what I like working with people, is like give them the empowerment to be able to do that, to feel like they don't have to hide behind complicated jargon. They can use the terms that people understand. Sometimes people don't have time to do it, you know, so you have to kind of build time into your processes to review your text, to test it with people. Because if you don't test your language or your content with people, then how do you know people understand it? You know, you might think they understand it, but do they actually understand it? And then sometimes there are still myths about plain language where it's kind of dumbing down or it's inappropriate. But, you know, studies have shown, there's countless examples that it saves time, it saves money, and people prefer it. Busy professionals prefer it. Do you really want to read like a 1,000-word essay in an email from a colleague where they're asking you to do one simple thing, or do you just want them to say, please do this simple thing, you know?
Are there any particularly egregious examples of this?
I think every year the Plain Language Society in Australia, they publish kind of their big offenders of people who have used jargon to mislead. And one of them is about how, so they talk about how General Motors in 2019 said that plants will be unallocated. It's like, so factories will be unallocated. It's like, what does that mean? Well, it actually means they're closing down. And there's another quote that I like from George Orwell, where he says, the great enemy of clear language is insincerity. So the great enemy of clear language is insincerity. So in the nonprofit sector, we're very sincere about the work that we do. You know, we do it because we want to help people, we want to make change happen. But if we're using language like unallocate or endeavor or expedite, people stop trusting us. So just remember that people want help, you want to help them, talk to them in language they'll understand. Yeah, so those are kind of some examples of things that annoy me when I'm reading them. Oh, and there's another one. I should talk about this. This is like an anecdote. I lost my keys the other week, and then I went to different places to find them, couldn't find them. So I rang the Garda station, and the guard said, oh, you have to attend the Garda station to report this. And I was like, attend the Garda station? What does that mean? Am I going there for school or what, you know? And I was a little bit stressed because I couldn't get into my apartment, and I just felt like his use of language could have been a bit better. Oh, just come down to the, you know, Garda station and we'll see how we can help you. But that attend just kind of, you know, gave me a bit of a bristle. So that was one personal one.
Is there a danger of being over casual when using plain English? Do we run the risk of sounding like cheesy marketing copywriting? Like the smoothie carton that wants to be your best friend?
That's a good question. I suppose it's about tone, you know, so I go back to the kind of metaphor where, like, I think plain language is like a pair of spectacles where you look at your content, you think, you know, am I embellishing too much here? What's my tone like? Am I being too matey? Am I being too cold? You know, so you want to kind of strike the right balance of being informative without being annoying, I suppose, you know. I also think about good design and good content being almost invisible. You know, like, you don't want people remarking, oh my God, that's so amazing, this content. You want them to like read it, get the information and move on, if that makes sense, you know. You want it to be so clear that it's almost invisible. So that's what I think about really good design. Like, you know, when you have bad design on the internet, where you're clicking and clicking and clicking and you think, God, this is not working very well. And you have easy design where you click it once or twice and it goes to it and you don't even think about it. That's what kind of plain language should be for me. When I think about smoothies that want to be my best friend, I think about, they're trying to, you know, sell you something. So language is trying to sell you something is different than language is trying to inform you about something.
For those of you listening who now feel inspired to write in plain English more often, I asked Sean for his top tips.
So top tips. So put yourself in the reader's shoes. That's the number one thing. Think about who your readers are and your users are. Think about their literacy levels. You know, that 1 in 6 adults in Ireland, according to the OECD, is, you know, has very poor literacy. So just, you have to write for those kind of readers as well. Think about their numeracy levels. Think about their computer skills. So just think about your reader. Think about how much detail they need versus how much detail you want to tell them. You know, sometimes the reader might need a small amount of detail where you want to give them all the detail. So how much detail is needed? If you're writing for the web, you can kind of put things above the fold, all the essential information, and put the other information below the fold. When I say fold, I mean like where you scroll down to get more information. So just think about your readers. Then when it comes to designing your content, well, in web design, they use a thing called persona. So think about who your reader is. Like, I am a software developer. I want to learn about Java so I can develop my, you know, skills. So it's I am a, I want to do this so I can. And that can really help you when you're writing any sort of content. And when it comes to the nitty-gritty of writing, think about how long your sentences are. You know, if your sentences are too long, people won't read them. Think about, so 15 to 20 words in a sentence on average. Think about white space. If you have lots of paragraphs that are too closely together, well, maybe you can, you know, cut some of the information and just add more white space, because people love white space when they're reading. You know, try to use we a lot. Use the active voice. So oftentimes people will use passive constructions. You know, the report was designed by five people. Said like five people designed the report. So use the active voice, because it develops trust. Yeah, and be concise. And sometimes most importantly is put the key message first. So whatever, sometimes when you write something, your key message won't emerge until the end, you know, and you might put it at the end. But like, redraft it, test it with people. You know, you might put the key message higher as long as you introduce it. And in terms of structuring your content, think about what we call the inverted pyramids of design, which is where, you know, when you're writing an academic essay, you're writing something a bit more discursive. You'll kind of go through all the problems and all the literature and then make your conclusion at the end. Where actually, if you're writing for the public, sometimes you put your conclusion at the top. Then people can get the high level information. Think about when you read a newspaper report, all the information should be in like the first paragraph, and then you can read through the rest of it to get the details. That's called the inverted pyramid of writing. And that can be a useful technique. So yeah, top three tips. One, think about your reader. Two, structure your content so that the most important information is first. And three, use language that they'll understand.
Thanks, Sean, for making an excellent case for saying what you mean, saying it clearly, and saying it simply. If you're listening to this podcast near the time of its release, you might be interested in a couple of upcoming Plain English events. Firstly, Sean will be giving a free one-hour webinar for members of The Wheel on the 16th of April 2021. You can register at wheel.ie/training. Or if you're interested in a more in-depth training course, Nala are holding a half-day Plain English training session on the 10th of March. It's €110 for community and voluntary organisations, or €130 for others. Visit nala.ie to book. If you'd like more information or resources on Plain English, visit nala.ie/plain-english. As always, we love to hear your feedback on the show. You can find us on Twitter at @the_wheel_IRL, on Facebook at The Wheel Ireland, or you can email me at emily@wheel.ie. Thanks for listening, and see you next time for the final episode of this three-part series.